I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. And we start our show today in northeast Syria. For years now, the United States government has armed and supported a Kurdish militia known as the Syrian Democratic Forces, or the SDF. And they were instrumental in the fight against ISIS in the area along the Turkish border. But on Sunday, in a move criticized by experts and policymakers across the political and ideological spectrum, President Trump abruptly decided to withdraw all U.S. forces from the Syria-Turkey border. On Monday, 50 American special forces were removed from a section of the Turkish border, leaving a security vacuum in the area and opening the door to a bloody explosion of a decades-long conflict. After a phone call on Sunday with Turkish President Erdogan, President Trump released a statement announcing Turkish security forces were about to invade the region and stamp out the Kurdish militia. SDF spokesperson Ahmad Musa made this statement in response.
We will not attack Turkey, but if they insist on attacking us and occupying our lands, we will call upon our right to defend ourselves until the last drop of blood.
On Wednesday, Turkish security forces began moving into northern Syria in a military offensive that has left 16 dead so far, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. With Syrian Democratic Forces on their own and the future of the Kurdish militia unclear, many are worried that ISIS cells could take the opportunity to regain a foothold. Joining us now to help us understand all this is Robin Wright. Robin is a Wilson Center Distinguished Fellow and a columnist at The New Yorker. Robin, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
And we're also joined by Danny Gold, a freelance war correspondent who has reported in the region. Danny, thanks for being with us in studio.
Thanks for having me.
Robin, let's start with you. The timeline here is a little confusing. After Sunday's phone call, President Trump seemed to send mixed messages about whether he was endorsing Turkey's incursion. Where does the president stand on this?
Well, the president has said he thinks the invasion is a bad idea, but he did remove U.S. forces. And he did effectively give a green light to President Erdogan of Turkey to move across the border and create a new safe zone. This has been an effort by the U.S. repeatedly to try to stall an invasion. A special envoy has been talking with the Turks, but making little progress. The Kurds have made a number of concessions so that the Turks would feel safer, but they were apparently not enough, and Turkey went ahead and did what it has long threatened to do.
Danny, has the Turkish offensive in Syria started in full force? I mean, what is the extent of Turkey's military operations today?
It's really hard to tell, actually. We've seen reports of numerous airstrikes, not just in the small region where they were originally going to go in, but as far east as a city known as Derik and Kamishli, which are big population centers. I've also seen reports of ground incursions, but it's hard to tell. There's so much different news coming out of there, what's accurate and what's not. I don't think it started full-fledged. There's already been, you know, civilian casualties and people fleeing the region and refugees sort of trying to head out of these areas already, though.
Robin, President Trump said that there were very few soldiers in the area and that we had a very small presence on the ground that was removed. How accurate is that? How many forces did we actually have there?
Until December, the United States had about 2,000 special forces, troops on the ground in different places in that northeast third of Syria. The number was brought down probably about half what it was, but they are, again, very sparsely spread out in northeast Syria. They operate out of a base, actually, in northern Iraq. The president has signaled in the midst of the growing chaos in Syria that he thinks it's time to pull all U.S. forces out. He threatened to do that in December. He now seems closer to doing that, despite the advice from the Pentagon and even many at the State Department that this is not the time, that the war against ISIS is not finished, that there's still a lot to do in stabilizing the area so that ISIS doesn't come back as it did in Iraq.
And to that point, I mean, talking about the U.S. troops who are still in Syria, Jen Griffin from the Fox News has been tweeting about this. She says, and I'm quoting her here, that she spoke to a U.S. soldier on the ground in Syria, and that soldier told her, quote, "The Kurds are as close to Western thinking in the Middle East as anyone. It's a shame. It's horrible. This is not helping the ISIS fight." Robin, are you expecting a similar reaction from U.S. troops who remain?
I've interviewed many of the U.S. troops who have served In Syria. I was there in March with the Kurds, the Syrian Democratic Forces. The Americans have a very close working relationship with this militia. They are among our closest allies in the Middle East. They did what all the other groups we tried to train and arm could not do, ended up either collapsing or turning into warlords. The Kurds actually took on ISIS, forced them out of an area the size of Indiana, and have been very effective in holding them back. The Kurds are still in control of close to 12,000 ISIS fighters held in prisons. Remember, this is not a state. This is just a militia. And they have more than 70,000 family members, women, children mainly, in a detention camp in the area that's exposed to the Turkish invasion as well. The great question is not just the fate of the Kurds, our close ally, but what about ISIS? Because as of yesterday, the operation against ISIS was stopped. The Kurds cannot fight on two fronts at the same time.
Danny, let's talk a little bit about the history here. Why does Turkey want to stamp out Kurdish forces in northern Syria?
The SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, is a rebranding. That happened in 2015. The group that the SDF mostly consists of is known as the People Protection Unit, or the YPG. Now, they are a Syrian Kurdish group that was formed roughly around 2004. They are actually an offshoot of the PKK, which is the Kurdistan Workers Party, which was formed about 40 years ago in Turkey. And it's an insurrectionary movement. The Kurdish population in Turkey in the southeast has been horrifically repressed. We're talking ethnic cleansing, brutal imprisonments, even genocide at various times. So that group rose up in 1978. And they fought this battle against the Turkish government. The Turkish government views them as terrorists. The U.S. actually has them on the terrorist list. The YPG, which formed in Syria, is an offshoot of that group. So in the Turks' eyes, that group is a terrorist organization. You know, they're more threatened by the YPG and the SDF than they are by ISIS.
How have those past offenses in Syria played out?
They've played out with well-documented grievous human rights violations, looting and ethnic cleansing that groups like Human Rights Watch have called attention to. That happened in a small area in northwest Syria called Afrin that was sort of a Kurdish enclave. Turkey went in there in January of 2018, and you've seen a large population of internally displaced people fleeing that area for the area that Turkey is now attacking. So not only are you going to have refugees from that area that were based there for a long time, but you also have refugees that fled from the previous area that Turkey attacked.
Robin, why is Erdogan launching this campaign into Turkey now?
I think he feels that the time is right now as the Syrian civil war grinds down, as ISIS, or the caliphate anyway, has been defeated. It does not hold territory. It's turned into an insurgency, which in some ways is just as dangerous. But this is the moment to do it, to establish a fait accompli, so that when it gets around to talking about the future of Syria, as the Turks, the Russians, and the Iranians are trying to do in joint diplomacy, that Turkey can claim it holds this area and may not give it up.
And Robin, we mentioned in the introduction that Kurdish forces are now going to be defending themselves. Do they have the capacity to do that? Are they prepared for this escalation?
This is a very uneven match. Turkey is the ninth most powerful military in the world. It has over 350,000 active troops and double that with reserves. It has over 500 warplanes, thousands of tanks and artillery pieces. The Kurds have vintage equipment, only about 60,000, including reserves, men and women, a few captured Soviet-era tanks, no air force. Their ability to hold off Turkey will be due to their commitment to preserve what they consider to be their homeland. The Kurds are the largest minority in the world and the largest minority in Turkey, and a very significant minority in Syria too, and they don't really have any place to go.
Danny, there were reports of civilians who were leaving the region yesterday trying to find a way out as this begins to escalate. Is there any effort on the part of Turkish forces to protect civilian lives?
It's tough to say. You know, they have been hitting civilian areas. You may see some lip service paid about targeting just the militias and not the civilians. But what we saw in Afrin, if that's any indication, civilians might not be specifically targeted, but there's not going to be any care given for them.
The president clearly, in his sort of back and forth, said if Turkey does something that he deems inappropriate, if you will, he's going to destroy their economy. So what does that tell us about the U.S.-Turkey relationship?
You know, Turkey has not been the best partner when it comes to combating ISIS. And that's one of the reasons that the U.S. Worked with the SDF and the Kurdish forces. We've seen sort of give and take there for the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years. But things haven't really settled down in a while. And we've seen this continuous push-pull, you know, ever since we struck up this deal with the Kurdish forces. The Turks are obviously not happy about that. The U.S. needed a reliable partner, and they haven't been able to really, come to a fair agreement on that. So I see the situation there getting worse.
On the point Danny made, President Erdogan is one of the closest allies to President Trump. They have a personal relationship. Erdogan is known to call Trump on his cell phone when he's playing golf on the weekends. That's what he did in December when he convinced Trump, who was playing golf with Tiger Woods at the time, to pledge to withdraw all U.S. troops from Syria. The Pentagon managed to stall that a little bit, but Erdogan called again on the weekend and convinced the president to stand aside, and even in the process won an invitation to come to Washington next month. The fact that the president not just pulled out U.S. troops, but invited Erdogan, which is seen as a reward for any foreign leader, to be his guest in Washington, is a signal of how much influence the Turkish leader has on President Trump.
Robin, there's another player in this, and that's Russia. There's some speculation that this move by President Trump could actually aid Russia. What are your thoughts on that?
Russia came out and has blamed the United States for its confused foreign policy. One of the things that's unknown is what happens to that third of Syria that's been under the control of the SDF. Do the Russians and the Iranians move in? The Iranians have ground troops, lots of allies, Hezbollah from Lebanon. Do they try to take that territory on behalf of President Bashar Assad? It's a very important territory, not just strategically, but also because many of Syria's oil wells are in that area.
Danny, and just to round this out, I mean, you've also spoken to civilians on the ground there. What is there, as we're talking about this very high level relationship between Erdogan and Trump, what are the folks who are on the ground right now feeling about what's happening?
They're terrified. You know, they view the Turkish government as an entity that views all of them, civilians including, as terrorists. For the Kurds, a lot of people view the PKK and the YPG as freedom fighters, even though the Turks view them as terrorists. People told me that, you know, for a while they feared being killed by ISIS. Now they fear being killed by the Turkish government.
Danny Gold is a freelance war correspondent, and Robin Wright is Wilson Center Distinguished Fellow and columnist at The New Yorker. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.